Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for June 14th, 2015. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me as always, welcome Catherine Smith.
Greetings from Atlanta, House District 55.
Okay. Yes. And welcome Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Oh, yes, good to have y'all. Well, let's start off. Well, actually, let me set up the show. About 7:20, we're having our guest from South Carolina, our South Carolina expert, Lachlan McIntosh, going to tell us all about the South Carolina primary, both sides of that. There's been some mayoral races, including Charleston, we're going to talk about. And then Lindsey Graham, he may not have gotten more news than any other Republican candidate, but he definitely has gotten more news from where he is in the polls than any other candidate. So it seems very timely to have Lachlan on to talk about all that South Carolina politics that's been going around. So that's coming up about 7:20. But until then, we're going to talk about a few Georgia topics. Haven't been doing that as much as we tend to it sometimes, but we're going to go home state, if you will. And one of the big stories of the week, and it happened earlier in the week, is Johnny Isaacson, now the senior senator from Georgia, revealed that he has Parkinson's disease. And obviously there's a lot of famous people, Muhammad Ali, Michael J. Fox, and others that have Parkinson's disease and have managed to still live very productive lives. I mean, if you have a physical activity, then it can affect you in big ways. But if a mental activity, you can still function and be very productive. So our understanding is Johnny Isaacson intends to run this coming election and continue to serve out. And I'll tell you, I have not voted for Johnny Isaacson in the past. Will probably not vote for him this time. But I don't think his Parkinson's disease should be an issue on why somebody should decide. They should look at how he stands on issues and vote yes or no based on that, not this condition. Catherine, you heard about this. What are some of your thoughts?
Well, you know, I have a lot of respect for Senator Isaacson. I actually did vote for him once, and I wish him the best, and I'm sure that I hope that he has extremely good – I hope he appreciates the good health care coverage that he has and takes advantage of all that medicine has to offer for his condition.
Yeah. Tim, your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to make any difference at all. He'll probably only draw, I'm not going to say what our friend David Neer would call some dude as an opponent, but I don't think he'll have a top flight opponent either. And his doctor says, you know, it's in the very early stages. So I don't think it'll be an issue at all. I think it was actually very astute on his part to get on top of this and come out with it now, because later on it might be an issue if it was perceived he had hidden it from the public. But to come out with it in such a way, no, I don't think it's going to be an issue at all, David.
Yes. Speaking of opposition, he just has two Republican opponents, Lee Benedict, looks like a guy who's run for a lot of things. Lee Yahoo, 07 state candidate, that would have been a special election, considered a GOP activist, a teacher, and a Iraq War veteran. Not sure which one of the Iraq Wars, if the first one or the second one. And then Derek Grayson, who ran for Senate last year, who's a minister, a network engineer, a Navy veteran, and a 2014 candidate, which we just said, for U.S. Senate. But those are both Republican rivals, no Democratic opposition. You'd have to think that someone will run. Have either of y'all heard any rumblings of anybody even looking around this race, Catherine?
I haven't. But it's still early.
Tim? Mm-hmm. No, I haven't heard of any frontline. I say no frontline folks want to take on this race because it's, I'm not going to say a sure loser. I don't guess anything in life is, but in the state of Georgia, running against Johnny Isaacson is about the closest thing that anyone can come to a sure loss. Wouldn't you agree on that?
Well, I'll say this. I do think that he is more popular than David Perdue would have been as a non-incumbent, even more popular than Sexton Chambliss would have been if had he run for re-election. But I will say this, because you're running in a presidential year, I think Hillary Clinton will be a very popular top of the ticket and put Georgia maybe not into that super, you know, that one that gets polled every day and it's within a point, but one of those, it's going to be single digits. She'll not do as well, maybe better than President Obama or Senator Obama at the time did in 2008. And therefore, I think this race could be closer than one predicts just because there's going to be people that are going to vote straight Democratic ticket, straight Republican ticket, and because the Democratic numbers will be higher, you could get someone that's a token opposition that you think, man, they're never going to do very good, and they get the percentage, an equal percentage to Michelle Nunn without near the campaign dollars spent, without near the attention. Is that enticing to somebody? Maybe so. And Catherine, do you think I'm crazy saying that a relative unknown could do just as well as Michelle Nunn just based on the year that they're running?
Oh, no, I don't think that's insane at all. And also, you know, I like to just say you never know what can happen during a campaign. You know, I mean, God forbid anything happened to Senator Isaacson related to the Parkinson's or otherwise. It's good to be poised with a candidate that can you know, serve if they're elected. It's anything can happen.
Yeah. Tim, do you think that scenario is true, that you could take a, you know, not as high-quality candidate as Michelle Nunn and that person do just as well based on turnout trends?
I don't believe any person will do as well as Michelle Nunn did, even though it's a presidential election year, unless they're a top-flight candidate, and they're still going to lose. I think he's going to draw, you know, some guy that used to be a member of the legislature or somebody that was a mayor of a small town or just, you know, somebody like that. And I don't know, 35 to 40% of the vote, maybe a little bit more, but, you know, I don't see anybody running as well, that well against him, unless I'm just stunned. I've been stunned before.
Well, I think that something could happen. I don't know how this would affect him being Tea Party or Libertarian candidate. Can I ask about this? You have Mark Kirk up in Illinois, who had a stroke, had to recover from the stroke. People had a lot of sympathy for Mark Kirk. But now that's kind of gone away. He's gets criticized. Just this week he made the comment about Lindsey Graham. I'm sure we'll discuss that later. And people were kind of critical of Mark Kirk about that. So even though he's come back and had this compelling story coming back from a stroke, Johnny Isaacson will be susceptible to the
same. Yeah, but you talk about different worlds. Illinois and Georgia in presidential election years are just different worlds. Now, there's Mark Kirk's problem. If he had never opened his mouth and said anything, if he had never had any health problems, he was still going to be probably one of the top two or three Republicans targeted next year just because he's in the state of Illinois and for no other reason. Right?
Yes. Oh, just believe him. I mean, just know that that's a bit of a parallel situation. Well, staying in Georgia, if I got time for about one more topic. Catherine, you brought something to us, and I want to, one, give you credit, two, sense what it's about. I don't think, well, Tim and I were thinking of this on our own. But you knew about it, so I'm going to give you the chance to do the synopsis of this, and then we'll discuss it from there. So, Catherine, tell us about Jill Chambers and the Oasis, if you will.
Well, I don't want to be, you know, particularly provocative. I think the interesting thing about the story is that when Jill Chambers was in the legislature, she was on one side of this issue with strip clubs in DeKalb County, and now she was opposed to them, and now she's working for this one club and defending their contributions to the tax base and their right to be located close to, I mean, not that close to an elementary school, but closer to an elementary school than some of the residents of the area believe is appropriate. So it was just an interesting turnabout on her part since she's no longer serving. So not particularly provocative.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, we got a podcast. We want to be a little bit provocative because we'll be able to tune in, if you will. I guess there's this middle ground that I guess I think a lot of people would see, whereas we understand that, I don't know if it's First Amendment's the right word, but there's some right for these places to exist, but we don't necessarily need them on every corner like a Quick Trip or an Ace Hardware. You know, there's a place for them, but not all, you know, proliferation of them everywhere. And so there's probably some middle ground. And I don't know, you know, how she argued it when she was in the state house, but then to the fact that she's working for it now is kind of a big change. I guess this signals she has no interest in returning to the legislature, since this would obviously be brought up as an issue the way she flip-flopped on it. Wouldn't you think so, Catherine?
Yeah, I would say that's probably accurate.
Yeah, and I think we were talking about it. It seemed like for years she was the number one target in the legislature. Every year that, you know, they would talk about Jill Chambers, that'd be the most persuadable or seat that could change over in the state house. So, Tim, do you remember back when that was kind of the number one target?
Yeah, she always was targeted. And I'm with you on one thing. I hope Jill Chambers is no longer planning on reentering politics as a candidate for anything, because she basically just burned that bridge, and I think that she knows that. So she's taking on the city of Doraville on behalf of this Oasis Good Time Emporium or whatever this thing is called. And so,
is it really?
You know, I'm informed of it. The Oasis Good Time Emporium, I believe, is the name of it. So I guess in her case, money talks, you know. We're losing you, David. Still lost you, David.
David?
Can you hear me a little better? Okay, I was telling y'all earlier, put it in the right hand, trouble, put it in the left hand, hear better. Anyway, I've seen this place going up to relatives because they don't live anywhere near it, but you drive past it. And I would see it at Oasis. I had no idea what it was, but since I guess this article, like, oh, that's that place, the Oasis, the Good Time Emporium.
That's it.
Couldn't like a Chuck E. Cheese pizza be a Good Time Emporium? I mean, that really is not very specific, is it? You know, that could mean a lot of things to a lot of people.
I would wager a good time will be had there, you know, so.
Yeah.
What a name, the Good Time Emporium. So, you know, but I guess she, did she represent that area, or did she represent an area south of there? In
DeKalb. Oh, I don't know exactly where her district was.
Yeah, I think
she's left the legislature. I think the borders of that city also changed, haven't they, Catherine? They've moved the city limit signs out and made it the city bigger there?
Yeah, I think so.
Hmm.
Yeah, and Doraville's an area that's very industrial. There used to be a big Chevrolet plant there. It's really not as many residential areas in the main parts where we drive. So
no, actually, it's listed as an M2 heavy manufacturing district. Whatever
an
M2
district.
Heavy
yeah,
manufacturing
that,
district. Yeah,
and I guess a lot of that was related to the Chevrolet plant. That area always gets a lot of attention. Back when they were talking about, you know, maybe moving stadiums, you know, a good decade or more
right.
ago. They'd always look at that because, of course, there's a MARTA station right there. And they're like, you know, and there's this big piece of property. And they're like, hey, we'd have the big piece of property. We'd be near two interstates, 85 and 25. And then we would have a MARTA line right there. And so eventually something's going to be built there. I don't think it's going to be a stadium because – you know, you're going to have two brand new ones within next 3 years. And they'll last at, what, at least two decades? At least as long, you know, a little bit longer than a car, right?
Hopefully.
You know, they're spending like $1 billion on them. I mean, they got to get a few years out of it. So I don't know what they'll build there, but maybe they'll build even bigger Oasis Emporium if Jill Chambers is successful in her lawsuit. What do y'all think?
Oh, and by the way, Jill Chambers' district was in Dunwoody. That's where her house district was, not in Doraville, where she's now doing all of this. So I don't know how far those two places are apart. But
and I guess both are in DeKalb, although I want to say part of Doraville's in Fulton.
No, I think Doraville's DeKalb.
Yeah, all that area, where DeKalb, Gwinnett, and Fulton all come together. It's so tricky where the lines are because they don't really have the same delineated, you know, county signs like you see other places. So just something to think about. Well, I think we're going to start talking about some presidential politics even more when Lachlan comes on. But in the meantime, we can kind of get into a little bit of it. And I think, Tim, you mentioned that Jeb Bush is going to announce tomorrow for our this week for president. That seems like a really poorly kept secret, right?
Yeah, pretty much. He's going to kick off his campaign tomorrow down in Florida. He has been delaying and hasn't been really doing much in the way of campaigning because apparently he's been raising money. And at the next reporting time, he's supposedly going to shock and awe his opponents with the amount of money he has raised, which it is rumored is going to be far, far above what the others have. And he's going to get into campaigning in earnest, and he's hired some of his brother's people, too.
Oh, good.
Like this Danny Diaz, the guy that, well, He was pretty much in charge of savaging John Kerry in 2004 and did a pretty darn good job of it, too. So they've always used the family's people. You know, W used his father's people, surrounded himself with them, and I imagine Jeb's going to do this, too. But it's going to be interesting to see where Jeb starts moving in the polls when he actually announces and starts campaigning, isn't it?
Yeah, I would think he'd already have started campaigning. One thing I'll say is for years now I've heard that one thing about the Bush family, and I would consider it a character, a positive character trait, they're very loyal people. They're loyal to their people, but then they expect loyalty in return. And I find that a bit admirable, although I guess in this case he might want to bring a little bit of new blood in since the Bush brand is, most people would think, tarnished, although there was a poll showing that George W. Bush is at his popularity in the past, like, 8 or 9 years.
I'm losing you, David.
We're trying to bring some new folks in.
I didn't hear your question.
We didn't understand a word you said.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's good, because I can hear myself good. What that's worth. Catherine, do you think he should bring some new folks in?
Yeah, he needs to bring some. I mean, he's going to need some people to attract young people, to attract a more diverse, voter group. But, you know, he can go ahead and stick with those old people if he wants. That's fine with me.
And so, you know, it'll be interesting, like Tim said, when he decides to announce, he is announcing this week, will he move up in the polls? Because he's kind of languished, I guess, is the best way to say it. Well, let's move on to our guest, calling in for, and appearing on the show for I don't know how many times now, always a great guest from South Carolina, Lachlan McIntosh. Welcome, Lachlan.
Thanks. Always great to be here.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead. I want to start out who I think is the most entertaining candidate of the week on the Republican side, your senior senator, Lindsey Graham. It's really not been that much about Lindsey Graham himself. It's been about the fact that he's not mayor. Kirk
right.
Referred to him as my bro with no hoe. I guess by default he called Martha Washington and Dolly Madison and every first lady a hoe, which is, you know, not really classy of the senator.
Well, Nancy Reagan,
also,
too, imagine that, you know.
Nancy Reagan, too, yeah. I mean, any first lady that's ever served, all 40-some-odd of them. And then he also said, well, you know, I could have rotating first on a thing you can explain
David,
better.
David, we're not hearing you.
Rotating first ladies will work.
Well, I believe that's what President Buchanan did, the president before Lincoln, who basically was asleep at the wheel and let the Civil War happen. So it's not a very good comparison, I would imagine.
Yeah, and just, you know, they had a lot of fun with it. They had like a toy that with a fairy that spun around and all kind of different things. I think that it could get really interesting. You know, these bachelor shows are very popular. You got all these dating shows that they, you know, narrow it down to one man or one woman out of umpteen. You could have like a presidential candidate version. He would get so much attention.
Idea.
Ratings would be great. And it'd probably be more interesting than a lot of these candidates. You know, things they'll come
it might be
through,
a
so.
Fundraising angle, too. So, yeah, win a date with Lindsey.
Yeah, although if they start paying money to these ladies, they're going to need to go to the Oasis Good Time Emporium. And if you didn't listen to the first 20 minutes of the show, we'll refer you back to there. Well, seriously, Lachlan, tell us about how Lindsey Graham's real campaign's going on the issues.
Well, you know, it's a kind of a mystery of what's going on with that. Obviously, I don't think he's running to win. You know, I don't think he can win the South Carolina primary unless somehow he won in Iowa or New Hampshire, of course, which doesn't seem possible to happen. He's got trouble with the Republican base in South Carolina anyway. And obviously, last year was a huge Republican year throughout the country and in South Carolina, of course. But he finished at the very bottom of the Republican ticket in South Carolina. He's got a very strange message. There's parts of it that are interesting. Obviously, he at times promotes moderation, mainstream conservatism. The old school conservatism is probably a better word for it. Yet at the same time, he wants to go to war with everybody in the world. And it just doesn't seem like a winning message to me in the Republican primary. You know, social moderation and then more war. I don't think that's what his polls are telling him to say. I think he's in to try to, you know, prove some kind of a point. Not sure what it is, but it's odd, and I don't think he has a lot of fundraising potential. And I just don't, even in his home state, I imagine that if the primary were today, he'd probably finish third or fourth. You know, so especially when you think about who votes in a Republican primary, you know, it's just they're not his people.
In his own state, that's really bad. Well, let's go ahead. I'm going to pass it to Catherine, then Tim. They can ask about other bros with significant others that are running for president. Catherine?
Well, how is the Republican clown car doing over there? Are they showing up and having rallies? And
yeah, you bump into them everywhere you go. It's obviously a little early yet for the big, you know, the major attraction and the big crowds, at least on the Republican side. But they're here all the time. Nobody seems to have a stronger footing than anyone else. You know, when you see the polls, you know, all the Republicans are bunched up together, unlike on our side, and it feels that way. There just doesn't feel like there's anybody who's way ahead or anyone who has any more support. And, you know, obviously, you know, you look to see if Jeb Bush can gather the support of a lot of the Republican leaders. So far, that's not happening. It doesn't mean it's not going to, but he seems to be struggling. You know, one of the things about South Carolina primary is the Republican presidential primary in particular, is that this primary for years and years and years was a primary that people, that the Republican establishment looked to stop the uprisings from the far right. Until, you know, this was where Pat Buchanan got beat, where Pat Robertson got beat. This is where, you know, former governors like Carol Campbell and David Beasley and others kind of, this was the firewall for the establishment of the Republican Party, where the far rights would get beat. That all ended in 4 years ago when Newt Gingrich won this primary. Essentially, the establishment lost control of the South Carolina primary, which it controlled very, very tightly, even more so than Iowa and New Hampshire. So I think it's wide open, you know, just like I think the whole Republican field is, and and I think that anything could happen, and it's really hard to kind of make a prediction at this point, just because it's just so many of them, and they're all so crazy, and Republican primary voters are so crazy at this point. You know, all that hate of Obama and Fox News just put them into kind of a drunken stupor, and it's just hard to tell what they're going to do.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's hard to, you know, one day you read the polls and you're like, oh, so-and-so's ahead, and then the next day so-and-so. But it's only by a point or two, so you don't really see anyone coming way out in the lead. And then we just keep waiting for Jeb Bush and Scott Walker.
Or even Rubio, yeah. And it's just, it's so, because, you know, you would think those would be the three that the Republican establishment would want. But, you know, who knows? You know, Cruz is here a lot. I don't know if he's going to run, but you know, Bobby Jindal was just here yesterday. I mean, they're just they're here so often that it's almost like a non-news event when they're here. A little different on the Democratic side when they come to visit, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go ahead and pass it to Tim for his question. Go ahead, Tim.
Good evening, Lachlan. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah.
What about the name politicians in the state, like Governor Haley and Trey Gowdy and some of those people? Have they come out and announced that they are supporting any of this plethora of Republican candidates yet?
Well, you know, and you'd think that they'd all be for Lindsey Graham, right? I mean, their home senator, this would be, you know, 20 years ago or 10 years ago, you know, it would be a no-brainer. They'd support the darn senior senator of their own party, but that's, of course, not happening with Lindsey. And the key folks haven't really endorsed anyone. And some of the fringe candidates have endorsed, like, a Ted Cruz or a Rick Santorum or crazy people, extra crazy people like that. But kind of the main leadership, Tim Scott's, have kept it very quiet, and that's what's interesting. And I think they're going to wait to see what plays out. There's just so much uncertainty with a field that large.
Well,
you know?
Well, I was going to ask you that. The latest polling I saw showed 7 candidates at the top bunched up within 4 points of each other. Do you think that's why all these named politicians in South Carolina are hedging their bets?
I do. And I think that they're going to try to look to see. You know, look, I think the Tim Scott's of the world, the Nikki Haley's of the world, they're obviously far more to the right than Republicans used to be themselves, but they're not totally insane, right? And they're going to try to figure out which of the mainstream candidates, the Jeb Bush, Walker, or, you know, folks like that, who kind of emerge as the ones that, like, they're pulling away, or at least the best chance of a candidate who can actually win. And I think you'll see them get behind that person You know, I think we're a long ways from that. You know, I think we're that's not going to happen until well into the fall, and it's a it's just going to be a crazy summer. You know.
Well, Newt Gingrich, of course, scored a big upset in your state. You've already alluded to that. Out of this field, is there a candidate that you're looking at right now that could repeat that could score something of an upset and win that GOP primary out of nowhere?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I don't know who that would be yet because there are just so many of them. But like I said, when the establishment of the Republican Party lost control of the South Carolina Republican Party, that was very significant, as I pointed out earlier. And, you know, I could see it being a Ted Cruz because his message of just pure anger, just as, and just like Gingrich's was, by the way. Gingrich ran on, you know, hatred of people on food stamps. That's how he won the South Carolina primary. So that just message of just anger and hatred really is, it plays well with our voters and our Republican voters here. And I think it's going to be, I think it's wide open. I really do. But yes, it's absolutely ripe for another, you know, another candidate, you know, off from the far right to win South Carolina, especially if, you know, a Cruz or a Santorum or a, you know, I mean, there's too many to name, does really well in Iowa or New Hampshire and breaks through. It's going to be hard for the establishment to stop them in a state like South Carolina. That's, you know, I wrote a column in a paper that I wrote. The Republican base has really been radicalized, you know, over the last several years. And, yeah, I realize that's what we call the ISIS militia, but I mean, it's not the same. But it's there's, you know, I'll just use the same word because I can't think of a better one. But you know, there is that, and they're not going to care necessarily what Nikki Haley and Tim Scott say anymore. You know, which is something very, very different than the past. You know, when it was time to vote for Bob Dole or someone like that, the South Carolina Republicans used to fall in the line and do that, and or George Bush the first, and it's just not the case anymore, you know.
Well, that's very interesting. Let me pass it back to David to lead us off in another direction here, David.
Well, one final question on the GOP part of this primary. We know that your state has the upstate and the low state. You got the Greenville, Clemson, Anderson area, Spartanburg, I guess it's in that, and you have Charleston and Columbia's kind of your breaking point. Are there certain candidates that are doing better in certain parts of the state than others?
I don't think we're to the point where we can make that kind of talk about that yet, just because I don't think any of them, they're all so packed together. I think it's more of the potential, and the upstate is more conservative than the Lowcountry. You know, the Lowcountry is fairly moderate and kind of a swing area of our state, so to speak. Charleston is actually becoming more and more blue. It's the far right candidates that have a chance to really do well in the upstate, where, you know, a plurality of the Republican primary voters come from. That's where it really gets kind of wacky up there.
Well, I know that's something to watch in your state more than some others. I'm going to pass it back over to Catherine, and she can take us over to the Democratic side of things. Catherine?
Sure.
Oh yeah. Well, have they come to visit? Has Hillary been to visit yet?
She has been, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, she's coming again next week. And you know, the South Carolina primary, Democratic side, is very much like it is everywhere else. You know, Hillary right now is far and away the leader. She's got the support of the elected officials who have endorsed thus far. But make no mistake about it, even in South Carolina, the Bernie Sanders campaign is catching traction among some voters.
Yeah.
He's coming to Charleston Sunday. He's coming to the local ILA hall. And my understanding is they already have 500-600 RSVPs. Now, I worked for John Edwards in 2004, and I could never get 500 people at the ILA hall. And he carried South Carolina rather comfortably in 2004. So there is some interest and excitement. But and Sanders and right now, and you know, I find that interesting, you know, almost fascinating. But clearly Hillary's the front runner. But the idea that she's always going to do that, always be that front runner, I think that's very much in question. I think not just Bernie Sanders. I think O'Malley or someone else that gets in the race could pose Maybe not a threat to win South Carolina, but do well enough to that it's embarrassing, you know, for the Clinton folks. And
well,
do well
I
enough
like
to win delegates, you know.
Yeah, I like to look at it a little bit differently than that, and that I think it elevates the conversation, and
sure.
So that's good for everybody. You know, one candidate, you know, charging through, just talking about what they want to talk about. Not that I necessarily disagree with whatever that might be, but I think it's good to have someone who's going to give some counter to that, to what that, whatever that is. That's why I kind of embrace primaries in smaller doses, not, you know, a 20 candidate clown car. So.
Yeah, right.
But
exactly.
I'm glad they're coming to visit you. They haven't been here yet.
And there's
yet.
Also, and I agree with you, and to you know, follow up on that, you know, even though I think there's a lot of folks here that want other candidates, they want a real race, you know, and maybe they don't, you know, maybe they want to see if there are other options than Hillary Clinton. You know, the sense of unity that I think that the Democrats have in South Carolina and everywhere else, I think is still very strong. And, you know, I don't think there's going to be much of a problem coming together when we all need to come together.
Right, that's my impression as well. But I'm glad to hear that they're coming over there to visit. I hope they come and visit us at some point.
I'm sure they will.
Tim, you want to go ahead?
Sure. Let's you know, go ahead and look ahead to the fall campaign, to the general election, and because she's the front runner, I'm not coronating her, but let's just say that Hillary Clinton wins,
sure,
goes on and wins the nomination. And if she locks down the traditional blue wall, you know, the 242 electoral votes that Democrats have been able to count on for the last six straight elections, and she then looks to expanding the map, would a state like South Carolina be a state that her campaign might want to take a look at?
Well, I'd love to say yes, but I think realistically, no, not yet. I think that Georgia's probably closer than South Carolina. I think Georgia's definitely closer than South Carolina is because of the demographical changes, and I think North Carolina is obviously going to be a state that she's definitely going to target. South Carolina's just not there yet. You know, there are some long-term positive trends, but you know, we're not going to be there by next year, unfortunately and sadly. I hope I get to live to see it one day. But you know, but again, you know, if it were just Charleston, sure, she'll carry Charleston County. She'll do well in the Low Country. But you know, the upstate of South Carolina is a very, very different place. And you know, obviously, the deterioration of white support among rural voters really has bottomed out, and it's just going to make it very, very, very tough. Now, I think she can get in the mid 40s, you know, which is respectable, but not enough for them to invest a lot of money, unfortunately.
Well, you know, I'm wishing for the same thing in Georgia that you're wishing for in South Carolina. I just wanted you to know that you were not alone, especially down here in the South. And with that, I'll throw it back to David. David?
Yes, Nate, we know the upcountry is more conservative, but the upcountry includes Clemson, I guess the second largest college in y'all state. Is that correct? It's smaller than the University of
I believe
South
that's
Carolina,
right.
Correct?
Yeah, I believe that's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
But still, colleges are known of bastions of progressivism, even in places where there's, you know, more of a conservative bent. Is Clemson kind of a little more of a liberal oasis, or is it pretty conservative as far as large universities go?
It's, well, compared to other universities, it's pretty conservative. And the county that Clemson's in is Pickens County, which I believe is the most Republican county in the state. I think Obama might have got 18% of the vote in that county.
Wow.
Now, that said, the only precinct that he won in that county was the precinct in downtown Clemson. Clemson's a really small town. You know, only about 10 or 12,000 people live in Clemson. It's a pure college town. But, yeah, I believe that – the town itself is much more liberal than anywhere else in that area. But the Clemson student body isn't as conservative as it once was, certainly in the 80s. But no, it's not. It's much more conservative than you know say, University of South Carolina or the College of Charleston.
Okay. That's just something I always like to kind of get a lay of the land geographically, and I think a lot of our listeners do too. Well, you mentioned Charleston, and we knew last time you talked, you told us about this really intriguing mayoral race. So first time
sure.
it's been opened up in like 40 years in Charleston. How's things going with that thing?
It's very interesting, and it's you talk about being in a bubble. You know, Charleston is a city that is Democratic. The county's Democratic. The city's even more Democratic. It's the demographics kind of mirror the state, particularly the racial demographics. But Charleston's just much more liberal, and it's you know it's a great city with lots of art, culture, and festivals, and it just attracts a very different kind of person. So there's six candidates for mayor. It's a nonpartisan election, but I think five of the six identify themselves as Democrats, and the other one says he's an independent. So, you know, the next mayor, the mayor now is a Democrat, so the next mayor is going to be a Democrat, it looks like. But right, Mayor Joe Riley has been the mayor of Charleston for 40 years. He took over in the mid-70s and really brought Charleston back from the Civil War, literally. I mean, it laid in ruins for 100 years, and what makes one of the reasons Charleston is so special, I think, is because it's almost by dumb luck. Charleston was, you know, burnt to the ground and shelled in the Civil War, like other southern cities were, but it didn't rebuild immediately, like say Atlanta, Columbia, other cities that kind of built more of a modern city. Charleston stayed there with the same shells of the old buildings that were there. And when Charleston started making its comeback in the 70s, instead of building a modern city, it built back the old city, which is why it's so unique and different. And Joe Riley has a lot of, Joe Riley had a lot of vision to do that and bring in some other like parks and festivals, Spoleto Festival, whatnot. It's the first open mayor's race in 40 years. I'm running one of the campaigns there, Leon Stavernakis, but there's some, you know, other folks that are running that are, you know, all Democrats. So when you think about how Republican South Carolina is and unfortunately is still becoming, to have a mayor's race in Charleston full of Democrats is interesting and kind of fun in some ways.
Yes. Well, and I guess are there any more big city elections for mayor anywhere else in the state?
No, not big, not in our major cities, but Columbia has a Democratic mayor. Most of our cities, you know, like in a lot of places, do have Democratic mayors. It just the cities obviously just seem to attract a different kind of person.
Oh yes, well, we're going to continue to check in on the South Carolina primary. And before we have you on again, where are some good sources or good in-state polling that may come out on the South Carolina primary?
You know, the in-state poll usually that comes at the group that does it in the in-state is Winthrop University, and they're probably due for one pretty soon. It's been a while, but Winthrop would probably have a poll out during the summer to keep an eye out for.
Yeah, because
I think that they're the only local group that the media would hire to do a poll and whatnot.
Yeah, sometimes you know about things in-state, we just don't know. Like we had Lowell Feld on from Virginia, and I had no idea that, Christopher Newport University does a poll almost every month on Virginia politics. I was like, oh, well, we had no idea. So we knew in-state you would know things about that we wouldn't know, like Winthrop.
I think Winthrop probably does a poll like four times a year. And it's usually, I mean, you know, it's not obviously like any poll, it's not perfect, but it's usually an interesting indicator.
Well, now, Lachlan, there is one perfect poll. It's that one that's actually taken on the first Tuesday in November. That one always seems to hit right on the money. What I like
surprisingly
to look at,
accurate, and usually very sadly accurate.
Yeah, for us as of late in the South. Well, Lachlan, great to have you on again. Before we let him go, Tim, Catherine, anything else I missed?
I got a quick question on that Charleston mayoral race. You know, Mayor Riley, as you alluded to, has been mayor for, 40 years there?
He will be when he leaves office in January, yes.
Obviously, his endorsement would be worth gold. And I know he has somebody that was working for him that's actually in the race. Has he endorsed anyone?
No, he hasn't. And by the way, he is still amazingly popular in the polling in Charleston. It's truly incredible that a guy that's been in office for 40 years would be as popular as he is, and you know, almost no scandal, and none of the problems that you see with mayors that have been, or any elected leaders that have been there that long, especially in the executive branches, you know, just natural things that kind of bring people down just never really happened to him. He's got two people in the race that have worked for him, at least in the past, and he is staying out of it. And I kind of expect him to stay out of it for a long while. And Charleston elections, we have the runoff rule like you guys have in Georgia. We don't have them in all general elections, but we have it for the mayor's race. So the winner's got to get 50%. So with this many people in here, there probably will almost definitely be a runoff. The runoff will be 2 weeks later. I would not expect him to make an endorsement, if at all, until that time period.
All right. Thank you, sir. David?
Yes. Well, Lachlan, thanks again for coming on the Kudzu Vine, and we'll call on you again as that primary gets closer.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think as it does get closer, it'll be, you know, it'll start to sort things out, and we'll have more to talk about. It's definitely getting hot, but it's just there's so many of those on the Republican side. It's just literally hard to tell them apart at this point.
Oh, definitely so. Well, thanks again.
Thank you.
Y'all have a good evening.
Thank you, sir.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah, that was Lachlan McIntosh, one of the absolute leading authorities on South Carolina politics, probably on the Democratic side, maybe the leading authority. And, of course, since we tilt that way, that's when we call on Lachlan.
Can I throw a question to y'all before we move on?
Sure thing.
Of course.
He brought up something that we seem to be hearing from a lot of folks in a lot of states. This Republican feel seems to be bunched together in every poll in practically every state. And I was wondering if y'all thought that maybe we're going to actually have to wait until there are actual votes before this thing breaks loose one way or the other.
I think we are.
And you know, the Republicans got rid of the Iowa straw poll this week, and so
mm-hmm.
we won't have that to weed out candidates early on. And it seems like there's a nationalization of politics. And so, therefore, it may be that somebody wins all three or somebody does very well in all three states, and you don't have the Iowa winner and then the New Hampshire winner is totally different, and then the South Carolina has to, you know, weed it out, and then from there the next place. So I think we're seeing all that coming in, and there's just so many candidates, and I'm sure a lot of Republicans like a lot of things about a lot of these different candidates, and so it's hard for them to decide. You got every brand of conservatism you could want, it seems like.
Yeah. What were you saying, Catherine?
Well, the one caveat will be money.
Uh-huh.
You know, if they run out of money, then they'll be – I mean, they could still be around, but they won't be able to make, you know, such a splash in the primaries, in the caucuses, and just, you know – make a name for themselves if they run out of money.
Yeah, I mean, the candidates that are running based on money. Now you have your Rick Santorum. I have a feeling Rick Santorum could just run as long as he's got gas in the car. He didn't have to have real cash.
Right, yeah, I know. I understand that. But money could play into how long certain people stay in the race.
The candidates that are running more traditional, get on TV, actually hire real staff, those kind of candidates that are really going to be the ones that you think are going to have the, you know, real shot, the Bushes, the Rubios, the Walkers.
Yeah, what worries me there is that, you know, we've got the Citizens United ruling. Now, these guys can raise unlimited amounts of money from any source. I mean, they could befriend one billionaire and get their candidacy bankrolled in ways that they could not have done that 8 or 10 years ago, and I'm wondering if that's going to keep 6 or 8 people in the race. They
it very
say,
well
hey,
could.
Why not? Yeah.
Yeah, although I'd have to wonder, if you're a big billionaire, why do you want to waste your money like that? Because, I mean, you're going to pay so much money, and there's a good chance that demographic trends and whatnot is going to make a Republican, certainly a ultra-conservative Republican, unelectable. So you're just throwing your money away. You could give it to so many better charities.
When you've got that much money, when you've got that much money, it's nothing. You know, you can write you've got billions of dollars. You can write a, you know, $5 million check to whomever, and you can still give all the money you want to a charity. It's about salesmanship. I mean, whatever candidate is able to convince that billionaire or those billionaires, you know, I'm the guy, I'm going to be able to, or I'm the gal, I'm going to be able to, you know, really run this race. You know, support me.
Yeah, Catherine, it's funny you mentioned that as we're kind of getting close to the show. I did see something where Mitt Romney, who's gotten in the news a lot, said, yes, you could have a 2-female candidate ticket on the Republican side. So I guess he's thinking Carly Farino has a big chance of winning the nomination and then would pick another female. I just thought that was kind of a curious statement that Mitt Romney I think that they're trying to take the wind out of Hillary Clinton's sails, making history when they bring things like that up. Well, let's talk about a new poll came out from St. Leo University. Never heard of St. Leo University, but that doesn't mean they may do great polling. And they ask, who do you favor for the Republican nomination? They did this poll in March. They did it again in June. From March to June, Jeb Bush was at 31 in March. He's at 30 in June. Hadn't really lost much. But then Marco Rubio went from 16% to 24%. And really every other candidate other than Mike Huckabee's taken about a 2-point hit in this poll. So Marco Rubio seems to be picking up everybody's votes except for Jeb Bush. Catherine, what do you think this poll from March to June is telling us?
And this is for Florida voters, right?
Yes.
Florida voters.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I think that that it was it's a reflection of you know, Jeb not stepping up and actually running until this week. Now he will. I mean, I think that, you know, you might want to support Jeb Bush, but if he's not running, you know, he keeps talking about how he's going to run, but he doesn't actually do it, then you start looking at the other candidates and think, well, if he doesn't run, who would I support? And so then I think that's how, you know, someone like Marco Rubio gains a little bit of support.
Yes.
And since he's a Florida guy, I mean, I think...
Yeah, and Tim, I thought something was even more telling. They asked who your second choice would be, and Marco Rubio was 29%, and Jeb Bush was only 12%. So if you put the first and the second choices together, I know we're not voting for Heisman here. We're voting for president, and second choices don't count for anything.
It doesn't surprise me. I've long thought that if, say, either Bush or Huckabee, the other two Florida candidates, and they can't pick somebody from the same state to run with them. If anyone other than them is the nominee, I think Marco Rubio is going to be on everybody's short list as a vice presidential candidate. Now, here is my problem with this poll. It is of adults. It is not of registered voters.
Oh.
That makes the margin of error, which normally runs about 3%, go up to 4.5%. That's a 9-point swing. That is an awful lot. Plus, it was a relatively small sampling of 535 adults. To see some more polling that confirms this, because the other three polls I've seen in Florida do not show Rubio making this kind of a jump. They have him in the first tier, but they have them all bunched together, these other polls do. And I just have to see something to confirm this poll, or I would really, for right now, have to consider it an outlier.
Well, they just polled adults. That's a good sense, Tim. What do they do? Uh-huh. Just grab the phone book and just poll people? I mean, that's really bad polling signs.
Yeah, I don't know how they do this. I'm sure they try to racially balance the poll and gender-wise balance the poll and all that. But if they don't ask you if you're even a registered voter, I mean, come on.
Well, now, Tim, just playing devil's advocate here, because you would think people at a university would be smarter than this. Do you think that they just pulled this off of a voter file, therefore everybody they called was registered? I mean, it seems like it would be a whole lot easier and obviously just more productive to pull it off the voter file.
Why didn't they say that? Why didn't they say it was of registered voters? No, this is of just adults.
Maybe they were not sophisticated enough to state it that way, and it was implied because they use a voter file. I mean, I really hope that a professor of political science didn't just poll people in the state. I mean, because you think there's some type of advisor putting this poll together that is an academic. Because if somebody just did it the other way, then you're beginning to go, how good is the St. Leo University political science department?
Well, because the more finite a poll is, the more it costs. We're talking about a handful of dollars for a poll versus, say, $60,000 for a poll. And for somebody like St. Leo University, that would be tough sledding there.
Yeah, well, I mean, but the voter file portion of it wouldn't be that expensive, I wouldn't think. I don't know. It's just
I don't know about that.
Maybe so. I don't know. That's kind of sloppy if they did it. They may want to get out of the polling business.
But you can understand why You can understand why I say I'd love to see another poll or two that would confirm these results before I sign on to them, right?
Oh, certainly so. And just looking at this poll, and this will be interesting to see if the other polls show this, Ted Cruz did not even make the top, like, five or six in this poll. He was behind Rand Paul. He was behind Ben Carson. He was behind Mike Huckabee. Didn't do well at all. Now, when you got into second choices, then he shows up. So does Chris Christie at that point. He shows up as well. But, you know, Ted Cruz is this Tea Party darling. Is this saying that the Tea Party's not very strong in Florida, or Ted Cruz is not very strong among very conservative voters in Florida? What do you think, Catherine?
Well, we don't know if they're voters.
Just mouth breathers. I don't know. Oxygen users. I don't know.
I think a lot of it has to do just with him being a home state boy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but Ted Cruz is from Texas, and Ted Cruz just didn't do very well in this poll. I mean, he's behind some other candidates that you thought he would run with that pack at least.
Yeah, but David, I'm just looking at the numbers here. I see Bush with 30, Rubio with 24, and then we drop down to Governor Walker at 7%. I tell you what, there's no way. There's no way that's true. Scott Walker, it should be running right almost even with those guys down there. He should.
Scott Walker's
I think it's a faulty poll.
But I tell you one thing that has been consistent poll after poll. Ben Carson is not going away as fast as people predicted. He's going to hurt, I think, some candidate's going to get hurt by him, whether it's Huckabee or Santorum or maybe Cruz. There's somebody.
Well, if he keeps talking, he's
going to
hurt himself.
Yeah, and then, of course, he came out and people may have said that he was weak on the Second Amendment because he kind of talked about guns maybe being more less needed or more needed in area to area. And, of course, Second Amendment people aren't going to like that. And
But for whatever reason, he stays strong. I saw another bumper sticker for that guy today. I've seen more bumper stickers for Ben Carson than I have for all other candidates combined, and that is including Hillary Clinton and the rest of the Democratic field and the rest of the Republican field. I've seen more Ben Carson stickers than everybody else combined for president. And I don't know what that's worth, but I find it quite surprising. Have y'all seen some of that, Tim, Catherine?
I have seen none.
I have seen some of his signs out your way, as a matter of fact, David, over on the old Somerville Road. There's a couple of houses over there that have Carson signs in the yard. That don't necessarily mean a lot, though. It just don't. Not yet.
Yeah. I know. I mean, he can't.
But a win.
But just it just seems so strange. I mean, I would think you'd see more Hillary Clinton signs.
It means that Dr. Carson supporters are devoted.
Yeah.
When I was at Notre Dame for the Tech game before the 2008 election, I saw Rand Paul supporters and signs all over that campus working it that day, and nobody else's candidates. You'd have thought Paul was going to get 70% of the Republican vote.
Ron Paul at that point, I believe, right?
I don't know. Well, I got Rand Paul on the brain here.
it's an easy one to confuse. Yeah, I remember he had the Burger King
supporters.
It's a
devoted group
of
people. Devoted group of people. That's what it is.
He had the people out front of the East Strong Burger King, like, every week on, like, Friday afternoon. They'd be out there for 2 or 3 hours. I don't know why they love the Burger King, but... now the Avon lady set up there recently, but they have their places, and that was their place. Well, great show, and next week we've already lined the guest up. Real excited to have John Rowley tell us about Tennessee. We went on LinkedIn. We said we need to find us somebody from Tennessee, and if our people didn't come through with probably maybe the smartest person on the Democratic side of Tennessee, media maker John Rowley, and he's going to come in and tell us all about Tennessee next week.
Great.
All right.
That'll be good.
Good night, guys.
Good night. Have a good week.
Kudzu Vine. Y'all too.
We are the heirs of that.